You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming right up, it's Movie Talk with Ed, DK, and Don. At 9:30, Per Fagerin speaks with former KBOO host and reporter Paul Rowland, who now lives in Italy. He'll discuss a popular revolt near his home in northern Italy over a massive high-speed train construction project. At 10 on People Rise Up, Andrew Geller examines the active proposals to site liquefied natural gas facilities along the Oregon coast. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, journalist Robert Fisk speaks on recent killings in Lebanon and hear about protests against the WTO in Hong Kong and a look at the death toll for Iraqis in war. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring 100% natural fiber clothing for women and men. Real clothing for real people. Proud to sponsor the important voice of KBOO. Gazelle is located at Northeast 41st and Fremont and can be reached at 503-288-3422. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizzicato pizza, and all-new seating, located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com. Here's Movie Talk.
Good morning out there. This is Movie Talk. My name is Ed Goldberg, and I'm here with my friends and colleagues.
Don Taylor.
And?
DK Holm of MoviePoopShoot.com.
Okay. Are we all on now? Okay. Yeah. Let's see now. I have to remind everybody there's going to be a DVD giveaway, but... Doug, because it's Christmas, we have our two DVDs.
Yes, they're going to balance each other beautifully. We have Alien vs. Predator, the unrated edition.
An excellent holiday classic.
Which is a two-disc set, and the very, very Christmassy, really. And also Freestyle, the Art of Rhyme, which is a documentary about rappers and dancers. And both are have their various qualities. And for it, you get a total of three discs. And we're going to announce this about 15 minutes into the show. So.
If you could actually combine those two movies with Alien vs. Predator, both fighting the rapper dancers,
that would be good. It is a Christmas movie, especially like the part where the alien covers the Christmas tree with drool. Okay, let's start with Gee Whiz.
He slimed it.
The big movie event of the season, I guess, so far. King Kong. Don, tell us about King Kong.
King Kong is a movie about a giant ape who
bites
love.
You have to do your chant.
Monkey movie, monkey movie, monkey movie.
Okay.
Which is better than Doug's chant because he kept turning around and saying Kong penis, Kong penis.
Ooh.
But because that's just Doug. But King Kong is Peter Jackson's remake of the 1933 classic film starring that starred Fay Wray and a giant kind of monkey puppety stop action thing. And in this case, Mr. Jackson uses all of his wherewithal and the talents of Weta Workshop to make a 3-hour and 3-minute epic version of the 1933 classic with dinosaurs and giant bugs and guys getting eaten by gigantic, what are they? Suckery things.
Yeah, right,
what are
right.
Leeches. Giant leeches with sharp teeth. Oh, and it's
Tremors
horrible.
3.
And it's very long, and it's very self-indulgent, and the acting at times is not especially terrific, but the special effects are amazing. Naomi Watts is the young starving actress who gets hauled off by director Jack Black to make his movie on Uncharted Skull Island. And it takes, about 45 minutes of exposition where you learn who all the characters are before you actually get to Skull Island, where where everything happens. And it's interesting enough, but it is a little bit long. And the end is a little bit long. And all of the action sequences are a little bit long. But that middle sequence where they're on Skull Island and there's brontosaurs stampeding and the monkey fights like three T-Rexes and Naomi Watts screams and runs around in a slip and never hurts herself or gets even particularly dirty. It's just fabulous. And I have to say that I liked it. I didn't love it, but I liked it quite a lot. And I would give King Kong a solid B. I think I would have given it a higher grade if he had been a little less indulgent and had edited it down to maybe a two-hour movie.
I loved it. I give it an A+. I think it's one of the best movies of the year. And I love the fact that he spent 3 hours and 1 minute fleshing out this tale. If you've seen King Kong, the original, recently, it like zips by in about, you know, 72 minutes. And it's so completely, it's what he learned a valuable lesson, this Peter Jackson fellow did, by making the Lord of the Rings cycle. And that is that you get the audience more involved in the story and the characters if you just dwell on things intelligently, not self-indulgently. I don't think this is self-indulgent. You know, if, I would suggest that King Kong fanatics out there, or Peter Jackson fanatics, look up the original screenplay, which is online, the original one that Peter Jackson did, which is, it makes fun of King Kong. It's got a bunch of subplots that are irrelevant. He wrote that before he did Lord of the Rings. Having done Lord of the Rings, he learned some valuable lessons about storytelling, and I think that they come through. This is very poignant. It's very sad at the end. It's terrible.
So it's the original.
It's as sad as the original.
I would like to agree with you on one thing, though. I just watched the original last night. It was on Turner Classic Movies. And one thing about it is very short, and there's absolutely no character exposition whatsoever for the human people. I mean, none at all. You don't know anything about Fay Wray's character, about the captain, about the director. They just are there doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the great things about Jackson's film, is that you actually learn who all of these people are. He gives Anne Morrow, the Naomi Watts character, an actual reason for her bonding so psychotically, which a friend of mine describes as the worst case of Stockholm syndrome in history. but he actually gives some kind of a reason for it, which is which is nice.
Well, I fall somewhere between the two of you. I certainly love the movie, and I was going to knock it down a letter grade because, as you say, it's very self-indulgent. It's not just that the movie's way too long, but that each individual scene, it's really a series of set pieces. Each individual set piece is way too long. And here I am thinking while I'm watching the movie, boy, this thing could have been edited, this thing could have been edited. And then the next day I said, who cares? The movie is strictly brilliant. It's an amazing movie. It's the kind of a movie where the special effects are not the movie but are in the service of the movie. And the fight you talk about, even in the original, the fight between King Kong and the dinosaur is spectacular. It's more than spectacular here. Andy Serkis, who did Gollum, embodies the ape. He's the one that plays King Kong, and the man is an amazing physical actor. That's all I can say.
And he's also in the movie as the cook.
As a cook, one of the cooks on the ship. That's right. What can I say? This is the oddest love story ever filmed. Jack Black hams it up. He chews up all the scenery he can find. This is a lot of fun. This movie is simply a lot of fun. I gave it an A-. That's King Kong, and you're going to go see it no matter what we say.
One thing, though, also, is that the people at Weta Workshop have really surpassed, like, Industrial Light and Magic as far as special effects technology. And that with both this and Chronicles of Narnia out at the same time, you can see their work on the screen. And what they do with Kong, he is the star of this movie, and his facial expressions, I mean, he's funny, he's touching, he's when he's angry, he's terrifying, but he's very, very real and understandable. It is fabulous.
Okay. Speaking of Narnia, that's the very next thing we're going to cover now. Doug, you didn't see this, huh?
Correct.
Okay. The full title, The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, from the C.S. Lewis books, directed by a guy named Andrew Adamson, starring Tilda Swinton, a bunch of English kids, and the voice of Liam Neeson as Aslan the Lion. It's big, spectacular movie, but no pun intended here. I found it curiously cold. There's a kind of a detached quality to it. I'm going to talk about another film like that later on. But in this movie, I think, should be warmer because the movie is all about restoring warmth to this kingdom that a white witch has taken over. It's the line is, it's always winter, but never Christmas. Aw. Now, I didn't read his books when I was a kid, and I'm sensitive to this. I didn't find, the Christian symbolism apparently inherent in this did not hit me in the face. You really have to be looking for it. I mean, this is not the Passion of the Christ. I don't know. The kids didn't really move me. The littlest one, who's really the linchpin of the story, she was kind of cute. The sadder guy, Mr. Tumnus, he's kind of cute. But the whole thing was oddly not enough, at least not enough for me. I don't have any childhood memories of the book, so I said, this is all right, I guess. And the other thing that's wrong with the movie, and it's not the movie's fault per se, is that after The Lord of the Rings and after Star Wars and after all the great epic fantasy films we've seen in the last few years, this is just another one, and no better or no worse than most of them. Don? Oh, well, let me give you a grade here. I gave it a B-.
I have to admit, I liked it quite a lot. I didn't love it, but I liked it quite a lot. I loved the book as a child. I was one of those kids that read that book and just loved the hell out of it. And to me, it was an interesting situation because everything that I wanted and everything that I expected did end up on the screen. But as far as the way it was presented, it was just a little bit too much of everything. The battle scenes were too big. The sets were just a little too elaborate. The costuming, just a little too costumey. It just, it's a book that I remember, you know, sitting snuggled up and feeling very intimate with. And then this movie is so grand and so huge because it's sort of de rigueur now that after Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings, that every single movie that has a battle scene has to have hundreds of thousands of guys. Like, everyone who lives in this country is in the army. Mm-hmm. So it did seem at times just a little overblown. But at the same time, it did deliver the basics of the book, I think, fairly well. So I'd give it a B. I didn't love it as much as I hoped I would, but I liked it quite a lot.
Okay, so that's Narnia. Now, this next movie is really something. This is the Jesus is Magic, the Sarah Silverman film. Sarah Silverman's been making quite a name for herself in comedy circles. Dawn, do you want to tell us about this, or you want me to cover the...
Oh, no, I can do it. I think she's taken a lot of stuff from her stand-up act and has made a sort of one of these little vanity comedy movies that people do.
That's what it is.
Where it's elements of her stand-up on stage with the microphone and then intercut with scenes of songs that she's done shot as little music videos and a couple of sketches. And the problem is that her comedy is so strong. She's very, very funny. And she's very, very profane. It'd be virtually impossible to actually describe or quote most of her jokes on the air. She makes jokes about the Holocaust and about sexuality and much of her, some of her humor is scatological in nature. And the fact is she's so sweet-natured and so matter-of-fact about it that it makes it all the more hilarious that she says these blithely racist things, playing almost like a character that's just completely unaware of her own ignorance and racism as she's saying these things. And they're very hilarious. The problem is that the linking moments, the little films, are really weak. They don't really work. And so they tend to drag it down as a movie. The comedy material is really strong and really funny, but as a film, I don't think it's really very successful, unfortunately, because I find her very hilarious. She's one of my favorite comedians. So as a film, I mean, I give the material, her stand-up act is an A+ all the way. The film itself, unfortunately, I'd have to give a B- or a C, because I just don't really think it works as a film.
Doug?
As I say in my review at moviepoopshoot.com...
Tireless self-promotion. Here.
There's a well, you got it. There's an interesting phenomenon that occurs in this movie, which is that, you know, you kind of wonder what the point of her act is, if she's trying to defuse racism or whatnot. But the perhaps unintended phenomenon of the movie is that some of her jokes are so funny that I found myself, you know, over the next few days after seeing the movie, telling them to people. So, in essence, she kind of gave me permission to be a racist and tell racist jokes for about 48 hours afterwards on the afterglow.
Oh, like you need permission for that.
And I think that
I've had drinks with you.
I think that it's, I don't know if there's anything wrong with that or not, but I think it's an interesting phenomenon, and I'm wondering what
what about the movie?
The movie itself is, I agree with Dawn. The stand-up comedy parts are good. The interlocking, connecting tissue of filmed stuff is just pretty, for the most part, pretty lame. Although one of the songs is kind of funny. I give it a, I give it a B plus.
Yeah, I give it a B plus too. But I have to say that Lenny Bruce is alive and well, and her name is Sarah Silverman. We just lost Richard Pryor, and Richard Pryor was the new Lenny Bruce in some ways, although theoretically his comedy was nothing like Lenny's. Hers is a lot more like Lenny's was, even to the extent that she stole a joke bodily from Lenny Bruce, which I thought was pretty funny. What she does is personalize, instead of saying, aren't they funny, all those racists, she embodies the character and makes you look at it because, as you say, she's an adorable young woman. It's like Mother Teresa telling a dirty joke, you know, watching her. She makes it work because she personalizes it. And I think that she uses that as a teaching tool. What she actually thinks about any of these things is not as important as the fact that she holds it up to ridicule and allows you to see how silly it is.
I disagree with the Lenny Bruce connection for one simple reason, that Bruce was just talking as a regular person, but she's playing a character.
He played characters as well.
I mean, he did bits where he would enact, you know, the Lone Ranger, but he wasn't pretending in his overall act, pretending to be somebody that he wasn't. She's trying to be somebody that she isn't. And for me, that makes her more like a Steve Martin or a Andy Kaufman. She's doing meta comedy. And comedy is supposed to make you think or wonder what the value of comedy is, which is one of the reasons why I mentioned the fact that I was going around telling all of her jokes over the next few days.
The Andy Kaufman ideas is not a bad idea, because clearly her comedy's been strained through Andy Kaufman. That's true as well. This is, again, the little produced bits are really weak. Her comedy is really strong. So go, and this is not for everybody. Some people are really going to be offended by some of the things she says. So take that into consideration. But I think that Sarah Silverman is magic. Okay, it's time for our DVD giveaway.
Yes, we're giving away Freestyle, which stars Mos Def, if I'm pronouncing that name correctly, and a number of other rappers and dancers, and Alien vs. Predator, the unrated two-disc edition.
Which also stars Mos Def as the Predator. Most people don't realize that.
So 503-231-8032, first caller. That's the way it goes. Okay, Transamerica. I wish you guys had seen this movie.
I wished I had too.
This is a movie directed by a guy named Duncan Tucker. Anybody know anything about Duncan Tucker? I don't either. Stars Felicity Huffman, who is currently tearing up the airwaves on Desperate Housewives. A kid named Kevin Zegers I hadn't seen before. The always wonderful Graham Greene and the always wonderful Elizabeth Peña in small roles. This is the most amazing performance of the year. I'm thinking of David Strathairn in Good Night and Good Luck. This is better. This is better.
Wow.
Felicity Huffman is a woman, but she's playing a man just before the operation to be transgendered, just before his gender reassignment surgery. So she is a man playing a woman playing a man who wants to be a woman. I got that out. And then, as it always happens in one of these little indie films, up pops a son unknown to her that was when she was still a man, that she fathered 17 years before, 18 years before, had no idea existed. And she has to come to terms with this young boy who has his own problems. He's a stud hustler in New York. He's a gay hustler on the streets of New York. I don't know why he had to be that. He could have been an honor student and it would have worked just as well. But this is an indie movie and you got to have stuff like that. Having made all those silly cavils about this film, it's a terrific film. It's very, very plausible, even with the little indie quirks that it has, all because of the dignity of the main character as embodied by Felicity Huffman. She is just great. The setup is really squalid. I don't know why they had to do that either. It's just another indie thing. But, you know, the movie's right from Indieland. Go see this movie. This is the strongest performance of the year, and it's a very touching, amazing story about a person caught between two worlds and not really knowing how to deal with either one and then having this thrown on them. I give this movie an A-, and I think everybody should see it. Okay, next movie. Oh, Tony Takatani.
And Taxi, Honey.
Yeah. This is an odd little film. Doug, do you want to do the lead on it? Do you want me to do it?
Go ahead.
Okay. Directed by a director named Jun Ichikawa. It's a Japanese film from 2004. Do you know anything about this Ichikawa guy?
No. He's done about 15 features or so since the 90s.
Well, this is the interesting thing about this film. The cast is probably people you didn't recognize, just like I won't, but it's Issei Ogata, Rie Miyazawa, and Shinohara Takahumi. I got through those okay. This is an extremely low-key but very stylistically innovative film. I mean, it's actually novel in the way it presents things. It's about loss and loneliness. It's a man who's he's a tech geek. Oh, actually, he's an illustrator, but he's somebody who works alone. And he's alone and lonely all of his life. His father's a jazz musician who's always touring and never sees him. And he meets a woman, and he falls in love with a woman, and she has one terrible flaw. She is insane, I mean, obsessive about buying clothing. She cannot pass a clothing store without going in and making big purchases. And after a while, this really starts to bug him. And they have to move whole rooms out, you know, furniture out of rooms to make closets for all these clothes she's buying. And eventually, I can't tell you what happens because it'll ruin it for you. Eventually, it's very destructive of their relationship. And then he decides that he needs to replace her, and he tries to hire somebody to wear her clothes and just walk around and look like her. At the beginning of the film, you don't do real scene changes very often. What you do is the film slides from left to right, as though you're watching a slide presentation where you're going to actually see the slides moving. And so the scenes within the set pieces slide into each other. And then after they break up, you start getting regular scenes where, you know, there's a break and an editing break in the film and a new scene starts. It's also narrated, and the narrator has this kind of detached hip thing that used to be like those old, it's almost like a beat story, like the people used to tell in the 50s, kind of detached from what's going on. The whole thing has a very mystical quality about it. There may be Japanese antecedents for this kind of movie, but it was really new to my eyes. Good acting, innovative direction. I think it was really worth seeing. I gave it a B+. Doug?
I think it's a C+ or B movie. It is beautifully done. It's a little on the slow pace side.
We have a winner? Okay, we have a winner. Oh, Dan Keller, thank you very much. Congratulations, Dan.
Congratulations, Dan.
It's back to Tony.
Sorry.
It's beautifully done, beautifully photographed. It's a little bit on the slow side, and it's just a wisp of a story based on a short story by, I'm looking it up very quickly, Haruki Murakami. I don't know if you mentioned that, but...
I didn't.
It's that originally appeared in The New Yorker, and... There is a sense of ominousness about the tale as you're watching it, but if I were to characterize it as anything, I guess it'd be as audition without the piano wire. It's, it doesn't really evolve into the direction that you fear it's going based on experience of some recent, Japanese films. But I really enjoyed watching it, and I think that, it's at the Hollywood, I think, starting in the play now or starting soon, and that's very beautifully done.
So, check this on the air. You did not see Cachet.
I did not see Cachet.
Okay, that's good. Did you give it a letter grade? I'm sorry.
C+ or B.
Oh, okay, you started out with that. All right. We also saw an odd little film. Well, I think it's an odd little film called Dear Wendy, directed by Thomas Vinterberg and written by Lars von Trier. Doug, you want to set this up for us?
Yes, this is, as you say, written by Lars von Trier, but directed by somebody else, and the person who did Celebration. And so from that angle, it's a little bit, it's completely different from a Lars von Trier film, but it still has that script, so it has that strange... kind of fated, everything just marches lockstep towards doom and demise. And the premise is that a kid who proclaims himself a pacifist finds a gun, and through the course of his obsession with that object, forms a group with a bunch of other friends, a gun club, but they're all pacifists. But of course, you can't have a gun without shooting it at somebody, and so things go from bad to worse, and it ends up with. The film ends up with something of a kind of Old West showdown in the center of the city with the lead actor from Billy Elliot.
Jimmy Bell.
Jimmy Bell.
Facing off against Bill Pullman, who's the town sheriff, and a bunch of other people. So I really didn't know what to think of this movie. It looked great, and it was fairly well acted, and I kind of liked the way Lars von Trier's scripts unfurl. On the other hand, there are so many ridiculous things about it that I was confused. It really confused me. Anyway, For Lars von Trier or Danish cinema fans, I think it's a B plus, but for ordinary folk such as us, it might be a C or a C minus. I confess frankly, I don't know what to think.
Yeah, I'm kind of like that too. It's Lars von Trier ruminating on our alleged culture of guns and violence in the United States, and he there's a couple of insights. You know, obviously it's not. You don't have to be a genius to figure out what's going on in this country, and the acting is uniformly wonderful. But the story is truly preposterous. I found the whole story ridiculous, and the stereotypes in the film, the archetypes that von Trier is creating, I thought they were clownish. I mean, the movie didn't reach me as being a truly forceful critique of what's going on in this country. I think it tells us more about what von Trier thinks about us than it tells us about us. It's a very, very odd film. This Vinterberg guy is one of those Dogma 95 people, and I think that whole Dogma 95 thing is nonsense. And I think on a really basic level, this film is nonsense. However, it's produced so well and acted so well that I have to give it a C-plus just for that. So that's Dear Wendy. We have about 4.5 minutes left, and this is a movie I really, really wanted to see. And circumstances forbade, but you saw Brokeback Mountain, don't you?
I did see Brokeback Mountain. Jake Gyllenhaal and Heath Ledger is a film by Ang Lee based on a novella by Annie Proulx, or however you pronounce her last name, Proulx. And Proulx. There you go. You know how to pronounce everything.
I make it up.
This is, to me, I honestly believe this is Ang Lee's best film yet, and he is a wonderful director. This is a beautiful film about two men. They meet as young men in 1963 when they're herding sheep. Their relationship starts sexual, and then they actually fall in love with each other. And over the course of the next two decades, they try their best to actually be with each other while at the same time fulfilling what society expects of them. They marry, they have children, they do their best by their families, but at the same time, the person they really want to be with is out there, and they can't be with them. And it's a very tragic love story, but it's also a beautiful film and a wonderful examination of this entire theme of sort of silences and people not talking to each other about things. The screenplay is by Larry McMurtry, and the two cowboys are very terse in their language, but the acting is so phenomenal that they get across their passion and their anger and their frustration. The wives tend to be kind of closed-mouthed and not confrontational about the one in particular. Heath Ledger's wife knows something's going on when he goes off on these fishing trips two or three times a year. She never talks to him about it. The scenery is beautiful. The cinematography is amazing. These mountain ranges in Wyoming, this examination of what happens when people are either conscripted by society or by their own fear to not follow their heart. And this is a film that could have gone badly and could have just been a mess in so many ways. It could have been fey, it could have been exploitive, it could have been overly PC. And instead, this is like an entirely new sort of film you've never seen, but like a virile gay romance between cowboys, and it's fabulous. I give this movie an A+, even higher if I could. This is, I believe, the best film I've seen all year. It is getting lauded by critics groups all over the place, and rightfully so. This is just an amazing, wonderful film.
I'll try to see a commercial before the next show. Okay, a reminder, we're doing our Best and Worst show on January 11th, I think at 9 a.m., I'm pretty sure. So stay tuned for that. I'm going to take most of the month of January off. Doug will be running the show, and so I'll see you again. Well, certainly I'll see you on the 11th, and I'll see you for the next show this month. King Kong, we all agree that King Kong is worth seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Narnia?
It's okay.
Yeah, take the kids and, you know, go play with them.
The talking beavers are good.
The beavers are good. Yeah. Sarah Silverman, if you like this kind of comedy, you really must see this film and just ignore the bad parts. Transamerica, I think, is a remarkable movie with a remarkable performance by Felicity Huffman. Tony Takatani, for style and acting and gorgeous photography, maybe. But what else is going on in the film? I don't know.
That could have been a 5-minute, 10-minute story.
Absolutely right. Dear Wendy, don't go on my say-so.
For Lars von Trier fans only, I fear.
And Brokeback Mountain, we'll all have an opinion on that next time, but Don says go see it. We'll see you next time. Thank you all for listening, and congratulations to our winner.
coming up,